Your Notre Dame football weekend starts now on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. Now your hosts, Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback Evan Sharpley.
That thing is short and to the point. I mean, we are right at it.
Let's get after it.
That's
it's
right.
Time to go. Notre Dame's sitting 1-0 right now, right?
That's right, baby. Crazy weekend. We've got a town filling up with people wearing red. It's everywhere as Georgia's invading South Bend and even all the way over to Chicago, it sounds like, this weekend, too.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing, too. They're traveling well.
It sounds like it. We were just talking before we went on the air. There was a tweet that I saw. Someone flying out of Atlanta to South Bend, which is kind of cool because they've got direct flights from Atlanta to South Bend on Delta. But someone, Delta gave somebody, I don't know if it was a $4,000 ticket voucher, travel voucher. It's $4,000 worth of something.
You can do some damage with that.
No kidding. Flight was oversold. Of course, everything is oversold all the time now when you get on a plane. But $4,000 to stay behind and take a flight later on tonight. I think I would have taken that.
I would have done that, too. Well, I'm seeing then, too, what the cheapest ticket right now is like $530.
Man, and they're going up. They're going up. We're going to talk about that sea of red in a little bit here. He's Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Stiers, the former Irish quarterback Evan Sharpley. The Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. We're presented by Sharpley Training. With us, you can be a champion. Call today for a complimentary class, 574-226-8234. You can also visit SharpleyTraining.com. Something we never mentioned last week, Twitter. Evan, yeah. And if folks want to tweet us a Absolutely. Question, they can tweet at you.
Yeah,
during
at
the
Evan
show.
Sharpley, EvanSharpley. If you guys have any questions, we'll answer those on air. So tweet at me at Evan Sharpley, EvanSharpley, and we'll try to get to those.
All right. Budweiser's weekday sports beat is tonight from 5 until 7. Of course, game day sports beat tomorrow at 4 o'clock. Notre Dame hosting Georgia tomorrow night, 7:43 kickoff here on 96.1 FM WSBT. The Irish beat Temple last week 49-16 to open up the season. So did they exceed your expectations, Evan?
I think a little bit. I mean, they did what they were supposed to do. On paper, and I had a score prediction of 37-17. You know, I think that this offense is capable of putting up those types of numbers on a weekly basis. I don't know if I thought it was going to happen in week one. I think I thought a little more highly of the Temple defense.
I did too.
And of course, it really was a lightning strike. I mean, Notre Dame's never had three 100-yard rushers. They had over 400 yards on the ground, 600 yards of total offense. So I don't think too many people thought that was going to happen. I think I was looking more in the range of, you know, 400, 500 total yards of offense, a highly efficient day. But, man, what an output on the ground. Some big explosive runs. You saw Josh Adams, Dexter Williams, you know, hit for some big runs. And Brandon Winbush was dynamic as a runner, too. So,
well, and I don't think we ever really got to see Josh Adams' true speed last year because of that hamstring injury that he had during camp. But, I mean, man, we saw it last week. It was on display from that first play on. He is their home run hitter out of the backfield for sure.
Yeah, and you know, he's going to be a guy I think that they're gonna feature, and then you have two other backs that can spell him if he needs it. I don't know if there's a specific number of carries the coaches are looking for, and I prescribed this last year, even though he wasn't at full strength, you got to look to get him the ball 12 or 15 times if you can. Now, one area I was surprised, I thought we would see Dexter Williams much earlier than we did. I don't think we saw him until the third quarter. That was one area that I saw. I thought that we would see him, whether it was a two-back feature, you know, with him and Tony Jones on the field at the same time or him and Adams on the field at the same time. I was surprised to not see him a little bit earlier. We might see him a little bit more this week. I would think so.
I was impressed, I think, when I sat back and I thought about this game afterwards, and I thought about it a little bit at times. Last year, even when they got out to Leeds, you would see these lulls where things would kind of fall apart. The other team might creep back in it a little bit, and even if they didn't creep in it, things just didn't ever look completely in sync last year. But Brian Kelly talking about these traits of excellence, getting things back in line, redoing the mental focus of this team and the whole thing. And I was just really impressed how we never seemed to see those big mental lapses that really plagued the team last year.
Well, I think it was like a collective feel from the entire Notre Dame fan base. And really, even, you know, sitting in the press box last year, you could kind of, there was that feel, whether it was the second or third quarter, where You have a Notre Dame team that started fast, usually would score on their first drive and be pretty successful in the first quarter, and then there'd be a quarter or two taken off where there'd be some big chunk plays and explosive play from the opposing team. But you almost got the feel you were just waiting. You were waiting for something
to happen. It was a recurring pattern.
And even though this game was, you could say, you know, close-ish for a while, you didn't really ever have that feel of Temple is going to really flip the momentum here and make this a game. And I think you could see that on the players' faces, the way that they were playing too, is, hey, we got this. And they went through a couple of drives where it wasn't going as smoothly as they would have liked, but then you hit on a couple of big plays and now you're looking at a 49-16 victory. And that's a pretty nice way to start the season.
That's right. And I mean, Brandon Wimbush, we look at him making his first career start, and that was probably just my biggest concern because we saw the tangible skills and just all the things that this guy has physically. We knew that with pretty good certainty that he was mentally there as well, but you still have to see it live. You have to see it in game action. And I mean, really, with the exception of that interception that he threw, there wasn't a whole lot that you could sit back and nitpick about his game other than he took some hits.
Yeah, I mean, but that's part of his game, and I know there's been a lot of talk on he's going to need to protect his body, and I'm sure if you brought him in here and asked him, he's going to say, yeah, I don't want to take 15 to 20 hits a game. We got to remember this is the first time he's been playing really live in a college atmosphere. You know, he played a little bit as a freshman, but in mop up duty, it's slightly different.
Oh yeah,
the bullets, I mean, they're fast. It's fast now. He's going to learn how to protect his body, how to take hits. Because as we saw, I mean, he is as dynamic a runner, a quarterback in the open field, you know, you compare him to a number of other quarterbacks that are playing the position right now at the college level. He has that special kind of innate ability to make guys miss and pick up a few extra yards at the end of the run. And I think, I mean, there were a couple, you're kind of sitting at the edge of your seat, like he could score on this one.
That's right.
And so it's and also too, you know, it was, I'm sure the adrenaline was flowing. You know, he's pumped up. Yeah, he wants to take this, you know, for a score. What he's going to learn especially too, you got a long season. You know,
right.
You're playing 11, 12,
exactly.
13 games. He's not going to want to take those hits on a week in and week out basis. So, there's a learning curve certainly with that, but a lot of great things to take from what he did in week one.
Three designed quarterback runs unofficially, but it looked like
I buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Averaged over 17 yards per carry on those three runs last week, but he did take the 16 hits. And here's what Brian Kelly had to say this week about those hits.
We would like to see him take, you know, take the knee and slide a little bit more when necessary, or when it's, you know, prudent to do so. But we don't want to take away his ability to be an athlete as well. But I think he'll grow into that. We didn't do a very good job on some pressures where he should have handed the ball out instead of trying to make a throw, or on a couple of boots where we released too quickly and should have held up an end. So it's a little bit of everybody doing a better job across the board.
Well, and when you listen to that, the biggest thing that he can do is stop diving head first and slide feet first
right.
instead and not take dumb hits like that. Get out of bounds if it's appropriate, whatever it happens to be. But how much of it do you think is, okay, this is still his first real game with this offensive line, and there's still kind of some feeling out for the lineman with a quarterback that has all that mobility.
Yeah, and also, I mean, in an offense like this, there's a lot of reading going on. So you said there's three designed runs for the quarterback. I buy that because I think teams are going to try to stop these three running backs, which means who's going to run the football? It means that Brandon Wimbush is going to run the football, or they're going to have to play action pass, or they're going to run the RPOs, and it's going to be another read in the open field where if a defender comes up, you're throwing. If he stays back, then you're going to be running. So with how much reading goes on, it doesn't surprise me. You could have two or three different plays within one.
Did it look to you, the touchdown run that he had, remember he was trying to bring in, I think it was a tight end and all that kind of stuff, did it look to you like maybe that was kind of a not necessarily supposed to be a run, a little bit of a busted play there because of that protection.
And I think that, I mean, that's what he's going to bring to the table. And we saw that at times last year in the red zone with DeShone Kizer, and certainly Malik Zaire had that escapability factor. Brandon Winbush is not a run-first quarterback by any means, but if you have that on the table where you can extend some plays with your feet, you could turn a busted protection or even a misread on your call into at least a positive play. And that's something that, you know, that I talk to the quarterbacks that I train all the time is, one of my quarterback coaches at Notre Dame, Peter Voss, when I was a freshman, he would say this all the time: you don't go broke taking a profit. I'm like, well, yeah, that makes sense. You know, that's completing the easy throw when you're going through your read progressions. It's not taking sacks. So, and that's going to be, you know, even more important, I think, this year, and especially this week, is not getting behind on the chains and making sure that when you're in the, you know, third down, you're looking at like third and five or less versus taking a sack or having a negative play, and now you're sitting at third and 8-10. The play call and play sheet is not very big when you're in the third and 10 plus. So when you're watching the game and you're wondering, why are they running a draw? Why are they running a screen on third and 10 plus? Well, you don't plan to be in those situations.
Sure.
And you especially don't want to force the ball downfield when the defense is set up to play at the sticks.
Running game is obviously going to help out any quarterback. And it wasn't just Winbush with his 106 yards on the ground. As a team, the Irish with 422 yards last week.
Wow.
Big time.
Unbelievable.
I mean, nobody saw that coming, right?
No.
Here's what Brian Kelly had to say about the ground game this week.
You know, similar to the question that was just posed, you know, when Mike Elko came on campus, the first thing that he talked about was creating a new line of scrimmage, tackle for loss, and ball disruptions. Chip Long was the same way. Chip Long was talking about a physicality and a demeanor in running the football. It wasn't about how many yards we were going to amass in total offense. It was about how we were going to exert our will in terms of running the football. So this is really just more about creating a mindset and building on that mindset. Look, we're in game one, okay? We have to continue to build on this mindset, but it started in January. It didn't start in August. And it's been the same message that these guys have heard every day. It's been demanding, not demeaning. And we're going to continue to demand that new line of scrimmage defensively, taking the football away defensively, and from an offensive standpoint, a mentality, a toughness in terms of running the football.
From day one, from Chip Long, we heard about this run-first mentality, and that's what the team was going to have. But we didn't necessarily see it all the time. It seemed like we thought maybe they weren't showing us everything. And the other side of it, too, is when you're out there going against your own line all the time, they kind of get an idea of what plays are coming, I think. But, man, we obviously saw that against Temple.
Well, Sean, I went back before the season started, and I watched quite a bit of film on Memphis. And Chip Long was the offensive coordinator there, and certainly he's bringing, you know, some of his wrinkles and trademarks into this Brian Kelly offense. And one thing that really struck me, and I think we'll continue to see more, is the run-first mentality doesn't necessarily mean that you run. And I think we might see that more over the course of the season because teams are going to start to load the box to try to stop the run. What it is, it's an illusion of the run, okay? It's quicker developing, less of the slow-moving zone read, more of the downhill north-south.
Right.
Hit the line of scrimmage, man-on-man up front with the offensive line. And even if it's not a run, let's say it's a play-action pass, but you're giving the illusion then that you're running a quick-hitting run, what does that do to the second-level guys like the linebackers or the safeties that are creeping up into the box? So that's one big thing that I saw with Memphis they did over and over again was – even if they weren't running, it looked like they were.
And that's, you mentioned that zone read, and that's something, especially last year, that I think frustrated a lot of Irish fans as they looked at it, and that you said slow developing zone read. And that's, they just couldn't get the hole hard enough. When they needed 2 yards on third down, they just couldn't get it because they just weren't getting through there enough because of what he was talking about, that physicality, establishing the line of scrimmage and dominating the line of scrimmage.
And what do we see? We saw a little bit of under center. We saw the fullback or the tight end as a fullback, mm-hmm, used a little bit. And I think that there was a period of time late in the second quarter, even early in the third, where you saw whether it was the conversation, you know, and who knows what's going on in the headphones of, hey, we need to do this or let's try this. But you saw a little bit more zone read heavy, and there were some drives that stalled a little bit. And the coaching staff, it looked like they made an adjustment. They said, hey, we need to get the ball into our running back's hands as quick as possible and really try to expose this defensive front right off the bat. Let's do less of the finesse, the pulls. Let's say we're going to get a hat on a hat.
What much finesse?
Let's go a hat on a hat. And you're seeing some of these stills and replays if anybody's rewatched the game. There are some massive holes.
Oh, man.
I think you and I could both run through and at least pick up a first down. You know, there's nobody in sight. So,
and that's what I saw some guys tweet this week. When they say on TV, commentator says, when they say you or I could run through that line, here's what they mean. And here's Quentin Nelson mauling somebody and Mike McGlinchey doing the same to his left.
Left side, a lot of great things. You know, I think the concern, if we're playing devil's advocate here a little bit, is the right side, especially at right tackle, is going to have to grow up in a hurry. I was surprised to see so much of early and really Robert Hainsey at right tackle. You saw Tommy Kramer in there. And Hainsey, I think, got beat back-to-back on a couple of pass pros. It's his first taste of college football, too.
Right.
And now, of course, you know, we're going to get into Georgia, but that's one area I think that the Bulldogs are going to try to exploit this week.
I would think so too.
Stacking that side.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what you're going to get with McGlinchey and Nelson. And I don't think enough is talked about with Mustafa and Bars. You have other guys with experience there too at center and right guard. But certainly the right tackle position, there's still a big question mark hovering over that position.
And we will get into Georgia here in just a few minutes on Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch on this Friday, second edition of the show. You can tweet us at Evan Sharpley, and we'll field your questions if you have any for us. Let's talk about defense real quick. And also at the end of the show, in the last segment, we're also going to go back. Last week we did some confidence picks by position. This week we'll do a little stock up, stock down with those positions based on what we saw last week. Defense, though, not completely dominant, but did look good. Your thoughts on what you saw out there?
Well, I love the quote that we just heard from Brian Kelly was moving away from the read react and trying to recreate a line of scrimmage.
Mm-hmm.
If I play defense, I would love to hear that. All right, I'm gonna pin my ears back and I'm gonna try to do some damage at the line of scrimmage. A couple of quick things that I saw are knee jerk reactions. Dalen Hayes has a lot of athleticism. Okay. I think that if he stays healthy, he's going to have a good year. I think he's going to create some havoc in the backfield. And who would have thought in game one we'd see a couple of sacks? What was it, four or five games last year it took before a linebacker had a sack, and we had Julian Aquara with the first sack, a defensive end.
Yep.
So, you know, I think my expectations were pretty low, even with a new defensive coordinator and new coaches, because you're still playing with a lot of the same guys. You know, X's and O's are one thing, but you're still playing with the same Jimmys and Joes, and you got to get those guys on board. What were the big things that were issues? Communication was a problem over the last couple of years.
Right.
So now you're simplifying things, so communication is going to get better. It doesn't mean it's going to happen overnight. And then from a technique standpoint, what do you think the coaches have been harping on for, you know, over a year is tackling. And there still were some issues with that too, and that's again,
but there's
that's
always
gonna take time.
Everyone's going to miss some tackles.
Sure.
I don't think that we can, now granted, because of what we saw, especially last year and the last couple of years, maybe we're more attuned to that.
Yeah,
we're watching that more closely. But everyone's going to miss some tackles, especially in game one when there's a different speed that you play at, and you're not hitting guys full speed all the time. So there's going to be some of that, but. But all in all, I was pretty impressed with what I saw.
And I think, you know, the good thing to and how I characterize how this defense needs to play this year is, and I said it last week, is opportunistic.
Right.
And they were. They got off the field on third down, and they created a turnover. And that's what they're going to have to do. You're going to have to look to create one or two. And depending on the game, this week they might have to get a couple of turnovers. But they're going to have to be highly efficient on third down all year.
Yep, I think so too. Here's real quick Brian Kelly talking about Mike Elko's defense.
Well, I think it's the philosophical approach to how we teach the defensive front, and the way that it is taught from the very first day that the defense is put in. We're not, you know, a read and react defense. We're going to create a new line of scrimmage. So it's all of those tenets. It's not just one thing. You know, the defensive line is going to play in a manner that they're going to get off the football. Our linebackers are downhill players, and you can see that with 10 or 11 tackles for a loss, 10 from different players, we activate everybody, safeties, corners, everybody is involved in the run fits. So it's a comprehensive philosophical decision to get the offense behind the chains. And so it's not just one thing. It's a philosophical decision.
And that's what he talked about, all those tackles for loss from all these different players. That's what struck me looking at the stat sheet. When you look at how many guys made tackles last week and all the tackles for loss and the whole thing were just fairly evenly distributed. Even Niles Morgan, who had a good game, 6 tackles, led the team. And they're just all these guys who were stuffing the stat sheet on that side of the ball.
If you look at Mike Elko's resume, you look at what he's been, you know, he's done at Wake Forest, he did at Bowling Green. That's pretty spot on with the type of mentality that he's creating. And I think to hear Kelly kind of characterize it in words, what that philosophy is, again, it's a fun defense to be a part of. When you can be active up front instead of having to, the read and react would be the words that continue to pop up.
Uh-huh.
But if you can play free and easy, if you know, we talked about this last week, if you know what your philosophy is, where you should be, what you should be doing on first down, on second down, on third down, you're gonna just tap into your God-given athleticism then, and you're gonna be able to make some plays. So I think that's why you saw so many guys contribute. Number one, they did play quite a few guys, but also just the style of defense is you don't necessarily need to rely on one guy. It's gonna be a collective effort with a lot of guys. Being put in positions to be disruptive.
Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. It is 12:22. Next, we're going to break down Georgia a little bit. We're also going to talk about that red mob coming into town that Georgia's bringing with them. We will do that when we return. It is game day tomorrow. Full day of Notre Dame football. Game day begins with the Jack Swarbrick Show at 1 o'clock here on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. 2 o'clock, it's the Brian Kelly Radio Show with Jack Nolan. Mike Elko is going to be joined by Drew Tranquil and Asmar Bilal as well on the Brian Kelly Radio Show. 3 o'clock, game day with my partner Evan Sharpley, Tim Grawl. You guys will be out there this week on the front porch of Ivy Court Inn from 3 until 4 o'clock. The guest this week, 88 from the 88 National Championship team, Captain Ned Bolkar and linebacker Wes Pritchett, continuing the year-long tribute to Ira Parsegian, 1971 teammates All-American and the first winner of the Lombardi Award, defensive end Walt Patulski, running back Bill Gallagher, and linebacker Jack Clordy. And also former Fighting Irish and NFL pro running back Greg Bell and defensive back John Mosley. You guys got a lot of people coming out there, man. But I guess that's what you expect.
We got a lot of food out there too. So.
That's right.
I can't eat as much as I ate last week every week. So you guys need to come out there and say what's up.
And it's good food too from Fisher's Tips and Chips Barbecue. So stop by Ivy Court Inn and Suites and grab an autograph, some free Fisher's Chips and Tips. And at 4 o'clock, Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat with Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and me. The official pregame show starts at 6:30, and then Notre Dame and Georgia kickoff at 7:43 right here on WSBT. When that's all over with, as if that's not enough, the official postgame show starts right after the game. Darren Pritchett, along with Reggie Brooks, I have postgame player interviews as well. So that is what tomorrow looks like here on WSBT. It all begins at 1 and runs through a couple hours after the game ends here on WSBT. That's a lot.
It's a lot.
But, of course, it's worth it.
If you stay up the whole, you might be awake for breakfast by the time it all gets over.
That's exactly right. One of these night games. I'm just glad it starts about an hour or so earlier, 7:30. This week, instead of one of those 8:30 kickoffs.
I'm already looking forward to the following week. We've got a noon kickoff.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot all about that. Yeah, we do. That's a game changer right there. With former Irish quarterback Evan Sharpley, I'm Sean Stiers. The Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. Coming up next, we will talk Bulldogs and that red invasion right here on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT coming up on 12:28 on this Friday. This is where you get the Weekend started with us, former Irish quarterback Evan Sharpley and Sean Stiers. We've got, of course, Notre Dame and Georgia coming up tomorrow. Georgia beat Appalachian State 31-10 last week. This game tomorrow takes place exactly 17 years to the day after Nebraska came to town.
Wow.
Interestingly enough. And I'm sure you've seen, I know you weren't here, that was before you got here to Notre Dame, Evan, but I'm sure you've seen all of those pictures of the stadium, just crazy amount of red. That was actually about a month before I got to town, actually, too. But I remember watching it on TV, and there was just red everywhere.
Cornhuskers always travel well, too.
Oh, man, I tell you what. That was Eric Crouch won that game in overtime on I think it was a 7-yard touchdown run, 27-24. But this weekend shaping up to look a lot like that. We got to talk about it at the top. I know. Georgia fans coming in, the whole environment is great for college football and everything. But as a Notre Dame alum, Evan, I'm curious, how would you feel if you see a fourth or a third or however much, if you see that much red in there? How are you going to feel if you look out there?
That means someone's giving their tickets away.
That's right.
Who is it?
Giving or selling them?
Well, it might be selling with how much they're, how much they're going for right now.
Some pretty high prices out there. As you said, the cheapest ones right now online are around what, $530?
Yeah.
That is amazing.
That's a lot of food you can eat right there.
And that's the thing. Darren and I were talking last night. If you're a season ticket holder, that means you can afford those tickets, so it's probably not going to be as big a deal to you to get some money. But if you just happen to have bought a ticket, if you got a ticket in the lottery or whatever back after last year, and you can get $500 to $1,000
on it.
I know, but does it bother you that a lot of Notre Dame fans have already sold their tickets to Georgia fans?
Well, I don't think it sends a very good message to the team, but also the environment too. I mean, if you're trying to build an environment is difficult to play in for an opposing team, you wouldn't do that.
Which is what a lot of this stuff is supposed to be about, right?
Right. The
new Jumbotron,
yeah.
The whole thing.
Making it a little bit taller so the noise stays in, whether they're piping some music in, those types of things.
Right.
It's Notre Dame Stadium has never really gotten the reputation for being a hard place to play in. It's been nostalgic. There's been, there's a lot of tradition. When teams are coming, they're almost more in awe than they are scared, which is another thing to deal with from a perspective of an opposing team is, the moment being so big, I'm at Notre Dame. But, now it's they're trying to create this atmosphere. They're trying to create this noise that's going to affect or give a home field advantage is
right.
Really what it is.
Right.
And now you're throwing it out in one of the biggest games. I mean, it doesn't sound right.
Could see as many as 15,000, maybe even more Georgia fans.
That's unbelievable.
Here tomorrow. But and part of this, though, as well, is the fact that I saw this week. It has been since 1965 when Georgia went to Michigan that they've been this far north. They don't
really
traditionally come north. So this is a rarity. This is a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about it, most SEC schools are staying at home, hosting the Appalachian States and whatever, even the other FBS teams, but they're not coming and traveling at this time of year.
I think it's great for college football.
Absolutely.
You want to see these types of matchups really throughout the entire year, but it's awesome to see a marquee under the lights matchup between a good SEC team and then a storied program like Notre Dame. And you have a lot of the SEC schools, they travel well because it's regional. There's one or two teams in a state, and they're very loyal to that group, and they're gonna travel. I don't think there's gonna be too many Georgia fans that are gonna be missing this opportunity to come up here, even to tailgate. I mean, I've been hearing that they're renting out a high school parking lot to have their own tailgate
over by Old St. Joe High School, and I saw yesterday some of the pictures that the tents that they're going to put up are going to hold close to 5,000 Georgia fans, and they've already got like 130 kegs of beer
over
there.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, and that's the other thing is the tailgating might have already started this morning,
that's
and you've
right.
got a 7:30 kickoff tomorrow.
Might have started last night. I heard they were over there at Brian Kelly's radio show.
Oh, I did hear that. It'll be one of two things. They either won't be able to make it to the game, or it's going to be pretty loud and rowdy.
Yeah, but that's I guess that's SEC environment too. So, all right, 12:33. Let's real quick. Let's hear what Brian Kelly has to say as we talk about what's going on the field with Georgia. They've got a couple really good running backs, Nick Chubb and Sony Michel are the two backs, and hear Brian Kelly's thoughts on them.
Well, they're difficult to tackle one-on-one at the second level. So if you let these guys go through to the second level, and you're relying on your safeties one-on-one from 12 yards off to make tackles, they need to be of NFL pedigree to make those tackles consistently, and I don't know that they will, because these two kids are extraordinary talents. So we need a close space, get down closer, and those are some of the hallmarks of a coach's defense.
Chubb's the bigger of the two, 5'11", mm-hmm. about 230. Michelle's a little smaller, a little more versatile, kind of thunder and lightning combination. He's 5'10", in the 215 range, but they both put up a lot of yards last year. They both, I think, Chubb has 3,400 career yards coming in. The offensive line, though, for Georgia is one of their weaknesses. So they've got these great backs, an average offensive line that didn't hurt them last year. They still ran the ball really well. So for going advantage, that matchup when Georgia's running the ball against Notre Dame's defense, who has the advantage there?
I'm still going to take Georgia. I mean, I really like these two running backs. I think that at least getting a little bit of kind of the pulse from the Georgia fan base and a couple of the guys that cover the team, they like where the offensive line is right now. They've seen some improvement throughout fall camp. They're getting a couple of guys back. There was a player who didn't play last week that was injured. They've got some experience on that offensive line. What it was, they underperformed last year. And you could say the same thing about Notre Dame's offensive line last year, too.
Right.
I think expectations were pretty low for this offensive line, and doing some of the research looking back in the spring, that was the feel. It was, they had some talent. They're just, the performance was not there. So I think that when you have two caliber running backs like that, they're going to give any team difficulty. The Notre Dame defensive front's going to have their work cut out for them for sure.
Here's Dan Matthews. He joined us on SportsBeat earlier this week. He covers the Bulldogs for GridironNow.com, and here he is talking to it, telling us about the offensive line situation for the Bulldogs.
The way the group played last year, I know that a lot of people thought there was a lot to be left desired there, and now you plug in a lot of really young players. I mean, they've gone right off the bat with a true freshman, Andrew Thomas, at right tackle, who played well last week. And then also as well this week, you know, at least from what we've seen from out on the practice field, it seems like they're doing some switching up at the guard position as well, at least from what we saw through the 3 days that we've been able to be out there. Solomon Kinley, I think somebody that you could expect to see at right guard, and then Kendall Baker, number 65, at left guard for the Bulldogs this week. But I would suspect that Isaiah Wynn will stay at left tackle, and then Lamont Galliard will be right there at the center spot. And in terms of how Michelle and Chubb played, definitely a lot better of a performance than we saw last year at times. I mean, guys, you know, let's remember, as a team, the Bulldogs rushed for under 100 yards against Zach Cunningham and the Vanderbilt offense, or excuse me, Vanderbilt defense. And then they were held to just 21 yards total against Florida. And, you know, Florida's defense is who they were last year as well, with Jared Davis, Alex Anzalone, and all those guys on that side of the ball for the Gators. So they definitely had their struggles. There's no doubt about it.
So there's Dan Matthews from GridironNow.com giving us a little bit on that line. And they did have problems last year, and they're trying out some new guys this week to try to kind of solve some things. Here's what I like about the matchup. I still think it does favor Georgia, because you've got two really good backs back there, and obviously they have shown that even with problems in front of them, mm-hmm. they can still do some damage. Mike Elko's defense, again, it's Temple. I get that, but they held Temple to 85 yards on the ground last week, and only 5 in the second half. And I think it was in the first quarter they had like 50 some yards, and they only ended up with 85 by the time it was all said and done. So again, yeah, okay, it's Temple, but they had a pretty good back mm-hmm. as well. They ran the ball well last year as well. They had two guys who ran for over 900 yards last year, Temple did. So yeah, I still give Georgia the slight edge.
I think it's going to be a great match.
But there's enough that, like, it would be one thing if you had Notre Dame's offensive line in right. front of these guys going up against Notre Dame's D-line. But I think it's enough to make it interesting, at least.
That's a good word. I'm very interested to see. And, you know, I think that we're going to get a really good feel early on in the first couple of drives on what's going to happen in this game. Especially, I mean, if you look at the line of scrimmage on both sides, because both teams are going to be dedicated to trying to establish the run. You have a first-year starting quarterback for Notre Dame, and then you have Jake Fromm right now for Georgia, who's stepping in for the injured Jacob Eason, making his first career start too. So you're going to want to try to take some pressure off these guys, certainly. And if you have good running backs, that's what you're going to do.
Absolutely, and that's what we saw last week when you talk about Brandon Wimbush and Notre Dame, and it's what Georgia saw last week as well. But when you look at this situation, okay, so now Fromm is the starter. He's coming in here, got to play at home his very first game. He was an early enrollee, number 7 quarterback prospect in the country overall going to Georgia last year, but now he does have to go on the road. But at the same time, he is still young. There's a lot to be seen from him. So who do you think has the advantage in the passing game between these two teams?
I'm going to go with Brandon Wimbush here, but I think that Fromm is also very – I mean, I've watched his film. Granted, he's a young kid. I think he can sling it too. It's not going to – if it's on his shoulders on Saturday – I like Notre Dame's chances.
Yeah.
That will have meant that Notre Dame has stopped the run.
Yeah, as I was going to say, a lot's going to be predicated on, is it 3rd and 4? Is it 3rd and 8 most of the time?
If he's throwing around 20 times and is, you know, efficient, if they're working some of the short game, if they're working some play action off of the success that they're having through the run game, I think that he's a talented passer. He's an accurate passer. Very level-headed. He doesn't seem to get rattled too much in what we've seen, and He's had success really at every level he's been at, so there's nothing pointing to the fact that he won't. But if he's featured, if he has to throw 30-plus times, I don't think that's a good look for the Bulldogs.
Sean and Sharpley in the Leprechaun Lunch talking about Notre Dame, Georgia tomorrow, 7:43 kickoff right here on WSBT. And the other matchup, the big matchup anyway, is Notre Dame's offensive line against Georgia's defensive line. This one could be worth the price of admission tomorrow, and here's some of Brian Kelly's thoughts on it.
Well, certainly controlling the line of scrimmage and has not changed as one of the key, you know, ingredients in success in college football, NFL football, wherever you want to go. And that will go a long way in determining who wins this football game again. You know, Georgia's offensive line against our defensive line and vice versa. They're going to feature both their backs. We're going to feature our running game. And somebody's going to come out on top. So it's going to be an old-fashioned kind of find out, you know, who's got that grit and determination, because somebody's going to have to find a way to run the football late and control the line of scrimmage.
Grit.
There's that word again. Weekly. That's weekly plug. Grit.
This is a big one. Georgia was 36th in the nation against the run last year, allowed about 143 yards a game. We saw how good Notre Dame could be last week. We don't expect them to get anywhere near 422 yards on the ground this week. What's a fair expectation? Who do you think has the advantage in this matchup on the ground for Notre Dame?
I've got a push here.
Yeah,
I do.
It's tough.
And really, when we're looking at the opposite side, I think it's a close matchup on the opposite side, too. I mean, you've got a couple of guys who are getting first, second round, you know, NFL potential draft picks in McGlinchey and Nelson. But you've got guys on the opposite side, you know, Jonathan Ledbetter, Trent Thomas. They've got some versatility there. And I really like this linebacker group, too, for Georgia. They've got some speed. They've got some athleticism. The front seven, I mean, if you just bottle up and watch the front seven on both sides, I think you're going to see a very physical, fast, athletic football game. Throw away the secondary. Throw away the skill position players. Mm-hmm. Just watch all the physical and all the speed in the box for a drive or two when you're watching this game.
Is this game more which quarterback throws the ball better, or is it simply from the Notre Dame perspective how well Brandon Wimbush is able to throw because of the fact that we expect Georgia to be able to bottle up Notre Dame's run game a little bit more?
Well, I think that it's going to come down to a couple of things. I'm going to look at the turnover battle or ratio there, who can protect the football, mm-hmm. not make a big mistake. And then also special teams is going to play a role here. And we saw, you know, Justin Yoon miss a couple of field goals last week. He's going to have to bounce back. But I think yards on the ground are going to be tough for both sides. I mean, if you compare the two running backs that Georgia has to Notre Dame's 3, I think they match up very well.
Yeah.
And if you look at Notre Dame's offensive line, you might have to give them the edge compared to Georgia's offensive line, but then Georgia's defensive line might make up for it. So
right.
I'm really, as just a fan of football, I'm excited to see what's going on at the line of scrimmage. And like I said, we're gonna get a good idea within the first couple of drives of how that's gonna go. And then both teams are gonna have to make adjustments. If you can't run the football, you're gonna have to throw, obviously. And then yes, it's gonna come down to which quarterback is more efficient through the air.
Yep. All right, we are coming up on 12:44. We're gonna do some stock up, stock down with some of Notre Dame's position groups after what we saw from them last week. Notre Dame and Georgia coming up tomorrow, 7:43. Kickoff right here on 96.1 FM WSBT. It's Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun. Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT.
The Irish by two. Kamara in backcourt. Up to Cooper. Nearly walked. Douglas at the buzzer. Off! The Fighting Irish are national champions. What a way for things to end. Notre Dame! Notre Dame! Notre Dame is the national champion.
And we've been talking a lot of football today, but wanted to make sure and mention that Muffet McGraw, the women's basketball coach, is going into the National Hall of Fame this weekend. The wow. Ceremony started out there yesterday. She's got her orange jacket and all that stuff, and that was definitely one of the bigger moments that I've had the opportunity to have with Notre Dame, is getting to call that 2001 National Championship. And it's amazing when you sit back and think about it. Muffet is one of just 15 women's basketball coaches to win an NCAA national championship.
She's a legend.
Going into the hall this
that's
weekend.
Right.
So that's right. She's officially a legend now. The class includes Tracy McGrady, another women's basketball great, Rebecca Lobo from UConn and Kansas, men's basketball coach Bill Self. So congratulations to Muffet out in Springfield, Mass this weekend for the National Basketball Hall of Fame and that induction ceremony. All right, so Evan Sharpley, Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch. We've got just a few minutes left here. Let's go through. We did some confidence picks last week, and we ranked how we thought some of these position groups would be. Let's do a little stock up, stock down with some of these. Starting off with safety. Stock up, stock down for the Irish safeties after last week.
I'm still right where I was.
Yeah.
I don't know. I had them as number five out of the five position groups on defense. I'm gonna stay right there. I don't know if they didn't do enough for me to say stock up, but they certainly didn't underperform. I think they performed about to my expectations.
It's funny because last week when we ranked all these groups,
we were
exactly the same, and we're starting off the same today because I'm not gonna say down, but I can't say up either. I've got them just what you said. They're right where they are. There can be some volatility, mm-hmm. obviously, because there is still some concern, and I think it's just going to be kind of a week-to-week based on the matchup kind of thing with this group.
I agree.
All right, cornerbacks, I'm kind of unchanged with this group as well. They only threw at Nick Watkins a couple of times. We saw some pass plays, but again, first game speed, all that kind of stuff, so I'm relatively unchanged with these
guys.
I'm
the same way, and it wasn't an offense that was going to really challenge them through the air either.
Yeah.
I mean, they were going to be a run-first team. This week, depending on how Notre Dame's defensive line plays, we'll see. Georgia's going to have some speed on the edge, so I think that they're going to play action pass a little bit. They're going to take some shots downfield. We'll have a better idea on these cornerbacks, I think, this week.
Yep, completely agree. I like what I saw overall, but you're right. We'll have a better feel this week. The Georgia receivers, when you look at their offense, I think if you said after the offensive line, that would probably be their next, I don't know, concern, but mm-hmm. they just don't have
replacing
the big flashy.
Isaiah McKenzie's tough. They
yeah.
they don't have that go-to guy. They're going to have a few. Javon Wims has some speed. They're going
right.
to have a couple of guys that are going to be in there. But their biggest thing is, can they find someone that is going to be like an Equanimeous St. Brown? Are they going to find their marquee player?
Right.
They don't have that right now.
All right. Defensive line. Last week, we split them up in ends and tackles. You can if you want. I put them together. But what are your thoughts on what you saw from the line?
It was a stock up for me.
Yeah.
I thought that they performed well as a group. You saw a couple of younger players playing. And again, I still don't know if that's a good, if that's a bad thing. They're going to get Mike Adu-Treadway back this week. He was injured last week, so you saw a couple of younger players getting some reps from the edge. You know, I like the speed package with Aquara and Dalen Hayes. Jay Hayes was very active too.
Yeah,
Trumbetti. Yeah, as was Trumbetti. I think those ends. If Notre Dame is gonna, and again, they don't have to be a top 10 defense for this team to win 10 plus games. They have to be good on third down, and those guys that you just mentioned right there are going to have to get it done.
And Jerry Tillery, I mean, he ran that guy down on there's a 20-yard pass play, I think, and he ran the guy down downfield, mm-hmm. made tackle. Now, him, there were some things that he probably could have done better, but again, as a unit, I thought they were good. When you look at the unit as a whole, 5.5 of the 11 tackles for loss and 2 of the 3 sacks for the defensive line. So I think
good.
You have to say
it's a good start.
Here. Yeah. Yep, and you talked about the player rotation. Don't you think last week against Temple they had to kind of get – so I think they were going to get some of those guys in anyway, but they got them in even more, again, because
Kurt Heinisch, yeah. Myron, a couple of the freshman guys. It was a good game for them to
Mimosa,
get some snaps.
Right?
Mimosa, yeah.
All right, linebackers.
Mimosas.
Yeah, that's right.
It's Friday at lunch, right?
There you go. What do you think about the linebackers?
I don't know. This is a tough one for me. I mean, I had them ranked number one. I would say my one issue was an inability at times to get off the blocks.
Yeah.
So I think based on that, I'm going to say stock down because I think my expectations were really high. I thought that – and Morgan did lead the team in tackles, and I thought that Martini, he played pretty well. You know, he had a fumble recovery, and Trinkle was in there too. I think, though, that for the second level, for this defense to really be complete, especially cover some holes up at the safety position, I think this linebacker unit's going to have to take a step forward.
That's true, and I think because of the expectation that we had, it has to be slightly down, even though Coney had the sack and some of the other things you mentioned. Didn't hear a lot of Drew Tranquil, mm-hmm. the Rover, who's part of that group and going to have to
– I'm wondering who's going to play this week at Rover, if we're going to see Asmar Bilal a little bit more.
I think
we could, but I think there'll be – I think the rotation between those two players and Bilal played. He played a little bit as well, but I think we will get a little more of a rotation between those two players.
Got just a couple minutes here. Let's run through the offense. Tight ends, as a group, I've got them slightly up because Nick Wisher had the day that he had 3 catches, 20 yards, didn't see it coming. Durham Smythe had a couple catches.
Big catch, yeah.
Yeah. Alizé Mack with all the expectations. Yeah. But again, as a group, I think you have to put them slightly up.
I'm going up too. Mack is the one. I mean, if he can put it together, you know, that's with what Wisher and Smythe did, I think that's going to be a group that can continue to trend up.
Quarterback, got to be up for, yeah. I mean, this is going to be just Wimbush, obviously, but you got to be a little bit up for him at least.
Yeah, and I mean, I think like we talked about earlier, is the potential was there. We saw it. We knew that he could be successful. It was going out there when it was an actual game, and he got a win. Some things to learn, you know, some things he did well, some things that he'll be able to clean up too.
All right, wide receivers.
Down.
Yeah, got to be.
Yeah.
Outside of St. Brown,
right.
Someone's got to step up from this group.
Yeah.
And we didn't
not
see
much
that at
to
all.
Write about with them.
5 catches for 33 yards other than St. Brown. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, disappointing. Running backs, stock up all the way. Come on. How do you beat what they did last
week? You can't.
Offensive line, I split it into run game and pass game.
Yeah, that's good.
Because run game, stock up, definitely. Pass game, there are some protection issues.
Yeah, right tackle. Hainsey, Kramer are going to have to figure it out. And I think that they will. You know, they're both very talented. It's different. You've got a lot of speed coming off the edge, and you got to be able to pass set, and you got to be able to stretch the pocket a little bit. That's one area that it's got me, and it's going to have to get better this week.
Yep, absolutely. All right, quick break, and then we're going to come back, make our game predictions for tomorrow, and wrap things up. Sean and Sharpley in the Leprechaun Lunch on WSBT. Sean and Sharpley in the Leprechaun Lunch, just about 12:58 on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM WSBT. Notre Dame and Georgia, 7:43 kickoff tomorrow night. Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat at 4 o'clock with Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and I. And at 3 o'clock, Game Day with Evan Sharpley and Tim Growl at IVN. And that is from 3 until 4 o'clock. Tons of guests. Ned Bolkar, Wes Pritchett, Bill Gallagher, Jack Clordy, former NFL running back Greg Bell, John Mosley. A lot of guys out there with you tomorrow out at IVN.
That'll be great. We always
IVN
have a good
and
time.
Suites.
Yeah. Ivy Cordon and Suites.
Ivy Cordon and Suites. I always do that.
Yeah. Food there too. Fisher's Tips and Chips. We got barbecue. It's a good time.
Get Can't beat it. All right. Prediction for tomorrow's game, Evan.
Here we go. All right. Well, Notre Dame's greatest strength right now, their offense, I think, and especially the offensive line, I think maybe offset by this Georgia defense is just the feel right now, or at least a wash, in my opinion. So I think if the Irish offense can score over 30, I really like their chances. Whether or not that's going to happen, I'm not sure. The Bulldogs' defensive line and linebackers, I think, are going to present some problems to this offensive line, especially the right tackle position. I think that if there are some issues there from a communication standpoint, could have some problems. And then on the opposite side, Georgia has some question marks on the offensive line, but they've got two really good running backs. Got a good tight end. They're going to have some speed at the wide receiver position. They've got a young quarterback who can throw it. This is going to be a big test for Mike Elko's defense.
Yep.
So I think if the Irish, if they're able to stop the running game, I think they're going to have a chance, but right now I just don't see it. So I'm going a close one. I think it's going to come down to special teams.
Okay.
Georgia 30, Notre Dame 27.
All right. I've got a little bit lower scoring than that. You broke down just about everything. My score is 24-21, and obviously tomorrow on game day, I'll get a little bit more into why. All right. Great job. Thank you very much, Evan. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch on WSBT.